safe place to connect with others, finding God's love after abortion. This is Cradle My Heart Radio.
Good evening. Welcome to Cradle My Heart Radio. I'm Kim Catola. So glad that you could join us tonight. This is a safe place for finding God's love after abortion. And tonight we are going to be joined by someone that I think you will really enjoy meeting. I'm very excited to speak with her live. Jill Stanek will be our guest. Now, Jill is really a hero, and I'm not overstating it. But one thing I do want to say is that her story may be difficult for you to hear if there is an abortion in your past. And after all, that's the primary purpose of this program, is to help you connect with God's love and to help you overcome whatever may have occurred regarding an abortion in your past. And so if, like me, you are the parent of a deceased child due to abortion, as you listen, there may be a grief reaction, because this is a story about abortion. And if you need immediate care and support, you can call us at 1-800-811-3003, and we will connect you to help off the air. Because as difficult as this may be, I hope that you will listen and be encouraged. You know, my healing journey began as I sat in church and listened to the truth that abortion does take a life. The vague sense that it had all been so wrong would come to the surface as I would hear the word preached on this. And it was difficult to hear, but I really truly believe that what Jesus said is the path to healing, when he said that if you obey my commands, and you will know the truth, and the truth will make you free. And so what matters, even if there is an abortion in your past, is where does your heart stand now? Because there is redemption for the pain of the past. Here's our phone number again. It's 1-800-811-3003. And the ground rules here, if you're new, are that you do not have to give your name. You can call us and be anonymous, or you can select an alias for yourself. That's all right. The point is that for many of us, the redemption finds expression through talking to one another, through sharing our stories and processing what has really gone on in our hearts. And we do have a healing resource for you tonight as well. We'll tell you about that as we go on. So 1-800-811-3003 is our number. And before we welcome our guest Jill Stanek tonight, I want to talk to somebody who's calling in from the Georgia area. Here at Cradle My Heart Radio, we broadcast in several different markets across the country at about a dozen stations, and our network is growing even as we're speaking. But one of our affiliates, in fact, the studio where I'm located, is in Griffin, Georgia. And joining us on the phone is Lucy Huff, who is in Fayetteville, Georgia. Lucy, welcome to Cradle My Heart Radio.
Hello, Kim. Thank you.
How are you? How are you doing tonight?
I am wonderful.
Lucy is the director of the Fayette Pregnancy Resource Center in Fayetteville, Georgia. And Lucy, I want to give you the chance to help people understand what the pregnancy help movement is. I still meet many people in church, many people who are Christians, and many people who might even say, well, yes, I am in favor of pro-life position, or I'm not in favor of abortion on demand, but they still don't know that there is an alternative. They don't really know what the pregnancy help movement is all about. Tell us a little bit about the mission about Fayette Pregnancy Resource Center.
Our mission is to help any person or family facing an unplanned pregnancy. And that might be at the point that they need a pregnancy test or need someone to talk to about their option. Or maybe they have decided to carry the baby, but they're not sure whether they're going to choose parenting or adoption. There are a lot of myths and misunderstandings about adoption. So we're there to give information, offer counseling, and help with basic necessities. The greatest need that someone has in a crisis situation is to know Jesus. So, of course, we're there to give them hope as well as help.
Now, Lucy, how long has Fayette Pregnancy Center been offering, Pregnancy Resource Center been offering these services in Fayetteville?
We opened in 1994. And we have recently expanded and moved into our new location, which is in downtown Fayetteville. And this beautiful new building is allowing us to serve more clients and raise our awareness in the community. I'm as concerned as you are, Kim, that so many people have never heard about pregnancy help centers and don't know that there is help. There's so much, so many resources available and a lot of loving volunteers who are there for people in need.
And Lucy, what I think is interesting too is that you're not unique. You're a mature ministry since 1994. That's amazing.
Right.
But if I'm the last I heard, I think there are about 3,000 centers that are operating around the United States alone. Of course, it's an international movement, but I mean, you're not unique. There are a lot of ministries out there. There are a lot of ministries in any given metropolitan area that are serving women in the same way that FPRC is.
That's correct.
And so so since 1994, give us just a thumbnail sketch then of where you stand within that pregnancy help movement. I mean, how many clients do you see in a year? What sorts of needs are they presenting that, you know, that the typical person who comes to you needing help, what sort of a situation are they dealing with?
Okay. We see about 350 to 400 clients each year, and they come to us for a pregnancy test, for counseling on their options. We also have a wonderful learning program that allows young moms to participate in a learning experience where they can earn, we call it mommy money, to take to our clothes closet. We have a fully stocked clothes closet because, you know, Kim, it's not fair to ask someone to make a life-affirming decision when they're in crisis and then not stand by them and not help. I think that's why pregnancy help centers are called the caregivers of the pro-life movement, because we're there to lend help, counsel, as well as basic necessities and referrals for other needs that maybe we don't provide. So we have over 100 clients at any one time who are in our Earn While You Learn program. And then a part of our ministry, a very important part, is our abortion recovery ministry.
Mm. I like to think of the pregnancy help movement, Lucy. The centers are the innkeepers in the parable of the Good Samaritan.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
you are the ones who are actually putting the people back together after they have been discarded in many cases by life and left on the side of the road in dire need of help. And so I really applaud you, and I appreciate the work that everyone in the pregnancy help movement is doing. Lucy, just quickly, I know that you and I are both involved in an event in the Georgia area, and you're going to be at St. Paul Lutheran Church next Sunday, right after the worship service, giving a presentation so you can help get the word out about Fayette Pregnancy Resource Center. Anything you'd like to say in inviting people to that event?
Oh, certainly. I hope they will come, and it's a great opportunity for us to be out in the community. It will be our first time to be featured at St. Paul Lutheran, so we're very excited about that new relationship, and I'm looking forward to seeing you there and appreciate that you will be having your book signing And I am, I think I've told you I'm reading your book and I love it, and I hope people will come out and support this effort to raise awareness of abortion recovery and the entire pro-life position.
Beautiful. Lucy, how can people get in touch with Fayette Pregnancy Resource Center if they want to know more about your ministry and partner with you?
Our telephone number is 770-719-2288, or they can reach us online at fayetteprc.com.
Lucy Huff, Fayette Pregnancy Resource Center Director, thank you so much. God bless you, Lucy. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you, Kim. Good night.
This is Cradle My Heart Radio. Our phone lines are open, and Jill Stanek is coming up in just a moment. 1-800-811-3003. Her dramatic story of being a nurse and having the worst possible thing happen on her shift. You'll want to stay with us for our guest, Jill Stanek, coming up. It's 15 minutes after the hour, and this is Cradle My Heart Radio.
Back to Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Join the conversation. Call toll-free 800-811-3003.
Welcome back. I'm Kim Cattola. Thanks for listening tonight to Cradle My Heart Radio. I want to get right to our guest. As I mentioned, Jill Stanek is a hero, and that is not an overstatement. Jill Stanek was a registered nurse in the labor and delivery department at Christ Hospital in Oak Lawn, Illinois, when she discovered the disturbing truth. Jill, welcome to Cradle My Heart Radio. I'm so glad that you could join us tonight. It's a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you, Kim.
Tell us what happened that night at Christ Hospital.
Well, as you said, I was a registered nurse and had worked in the labor and delivery department for a year without knowing that abortion was going on all around me. But I came to work one night and heard and report that we were aborting a second trimester baby with Down syndrome. And that's the first that I heard about it. And I went on to find out that the method of abortion at the hospital used sometimes resulted in babies being aborted alive. And if they were aborted alive, they were allowed to die without any medical intervention. And so one night, a nursing coworker was taking a little abortion survivor to the soiled utility room to die because that's where they were taken. And his parents didn't want to hold him, and she didn't have time to hold him that night. And so when she told me what she was doing, I couldn't bear the thought of this suffering child dying alone. So I cradled and rocked him for the 45 minutes that he lived. He was between 21 and 22 weeks old, and he wasn't mature enough to have survived even if he'd been resuscitated. His lungs just weren't fully developed. And after he was pronounced dead, I took him to the morgue, you know, where all dead patients were taken. The hospital was acknowledging that, you know, this was a human being. And needless to say, that was a life-changing event for me. And whereas I was probably an ambivalent pro-lifer before then, you know, just personally pro-life, and, you know, but not necessarily wanting to tell anybody else, you know, what to do about abortion, I was just immediately turned into a pro-life activist, and haven't looked back since.
Jill, I want to pause just a moment there and take a minute to give honor and dignity to the memory of that child. Do you know what happened after the child was left at the morgue?
No. My experience then, you know, when I became aware and started paying more attention, was that parents are given the option of either hospital disposition or taking the baby, you know, burying the baby or cremating the baby. And as you can imagine, Kim, in the case of abortion, they, you know, didn't want anything to do with the baby. And so then the baby would often be sent to pathology to be examined, to be used for research, and or disposed of, one or the other.
And now, when you said that you became, and it's such a stunning story that I'm trying to kind of keep the conversation going, but I know that people listening to it are probably stunned if it's the first time hearing your story, because it's just hard to take it in. But so as you were taking this in, the next day, as I understand it, you went to have conversations with the hospital's leadership, thinking that surely they didn't know that this was going on. I mean, tell me the rest of the story. What happened after that? I know that you became mobilized, but tell me about the steps, about what steps you took next.
Well, the next day, I didn't go to the hospital. I went to my pastor to try and figure out how to proceed. And we determined to proceed as Jesus said in Matthew 18, when you see someone in sin, you know, first you approach them privately. If that doesn't make any difference, then you take back a witness or two, again, privately. And then if they still don't change, then you take the matter before the church or go public, so to speak. So I wrote a letter to the hospital administrators because I wondered if they knew. You know, the hospital was affiliated with two religious denominations. And I didn't know at that time there was such a thing as pro-abortion church denominations. Well, of course I do now, but then they're affiliated with the United Church of Christ and the Evangelical Lutheran Church of America. Both of those are pro-abortion. And so, unbeknownst to me that they were, I just thought they were not in the know. They responded and said, yes, they knew. They weren't going to stop. I was called in for a meeting with my superiors, and they told me that I might be better off at another hospital that was more in line with my pro-life convictions. But I knew that I couldn't leave, you know, that I read a scripture passage that I thought spoke directly to me. It was Proverbs 24:11-12, and it's familiar to many people in the pro-life movement, but I'll just mention what it is. It says, rescue those who are unjustly sentenced to die. Don't stand back and let them die. Don't try to disclaim responsibility by saying that you didn't know. For the Lord who knows all hearts knows you knew, and he will reward everyone according to his deeds. And so I thought I had to stay. And next step was, you know, again, trying to keep this private, was to ask some influential people and organizations to privately appeal to the hospital, such as Dr. C. Everett Koop, the former Surgeon General of the United States under President Reagan, who was pro-life, Cardinal Francis George of Chicago, Concerned Women for America, but appeals such as this had no impact. And so we went public in July of 1999. My pastor wrote a letter and distributed it to 70 churches and pro-life organizations in the Chicago area and around the country, letting them know what Christ Hospital was up to, as he had promised them he was going to do. And it was my pastor's letter that just triggered immediate public outcry. Number one, because nobody had ever known publicly about this method of abortion called induced labor abortion that could result in abortion survivors. And number two, that this had been discovered at a hospital named Christ, which, you know, to Christians was just blasphemous. So before I knew it, the story was in, you know, New York Times and Newsweek, and I was on the O'Reilly Factor and just being interviewed from one end of the country to the other. And meanwhile, I stayed at the hospital. You know, again, I thought that if God knew what I was getting into without me knowing it, you know, he thought I was up to the task, and so I needed to stay. If I left, then the babies would die and nobody would be there to talk about it or find out about it. And also there was a huge yellow cross on top of the hospital. And so I think if the hospital had been named Cook County Hospital or something, I might not have stayed, but it was for those two big reasons I did stay until I was fired in August of 2001, after having gone public for 2 years, I just stayed on. I didn't know what was going to happen, but I was fired. And by that time, I was speaking, being asked to speak around the country, and so I've just been, you know, my life took a turn, and I've been speaking and writing on the issue ever since, and becoming involved politically too. The Attorney General of Illinois determined that the hospital wasn't breaking a law, and so there was a bill introduced in Illinois called the Born Alive Infant Protection Act, and it was also introduced in the federal level. So I testified before a congressional committee in D.C., and I also testified here in Illinois regarding the state version of the same bill. And this was back in 2001, 2, and 3. And the reason that this still is political fodder is because the committees before which I testified in Illinois were on those committees was a state senator named Barack Obama. And he voted against the Born Alive Act four times. He was the only senator to speak against it on the Senate floor. And again, nobody knew who he was back then. He was just, you know, another liberal, and you know that you see quite often, especially in Illinois. But his opposition to the Born Alive Act has set him apart as a politician. And so every time that he runs, you know, when he ran for U.S. Senate, when he ran for president the first time in 2008, now in 2012, it continues to come up. So,
Jill Stanek is our guest. I don't want to interrupt you, but I just we're getting close to a break.
Yeah.
Well, no, Jill, I there's so much that we could talk about. I mean, there are a lot of follow-up questions. I do want to give people the chance to speak with you directly. So I want to give the phone number at 1-800-811-3003. I mean, we have the heart that you had for children and for your calling and vocation as a nurse. We have opposing authority. We have the fact that no law existed, and then you became an activist. You were, I don't know if you were a reluctant activist. It sounds as though that's maybe an apt way to put it.
Mm-hmm.
And what you learned about how the law works and how you influence legislation. There's so many things that we can talk about. But again, I want to give the listeners a chance to speak with you directly. 1-800-811-3003. And I also do want to say that it's second trimester abortions are not as common as first trimester abortions, but I think they are almost always much more traumatic. And if you have a second trimester abortion in your past, and the story that you're hearing tonight is reminding you or triggering grief, please, you can also call our number and we will connect you with Resource Off the Air, where there's caring, understanding, trained help available to you to talk this through tonight. 811-3003 is our number. 1-800-811-3003. So Jill, just about a minute now before this break, the most striking thing to you as you became involved in the political process, if you can just give us that in 1 minute before we go to our break. You know, for those that are still, as you put it, personally pro-life, but really don't know where they stand on this from a public point of view.
Well, there's a lot to cover there, but, you know, what has been the most eye-opening in a minute or less throughout this whole process is just how embedded the pro-abortion, pro-death mentality is, not just in the U.S., but around the world. I just think that it must just be Satan's favorite thing to do, to get back to God, at God, and it is very deeply rooted and very difficult to overcome, just politically in the courts and with so many people who are personally pro-life or, you know, maybe even mildly pro-choice and, you know, are disturbed by it but don't want to interfere. There's a malaise, too, on the issue.
Mm. Our guest is Jill Stanek. Our phone lines are open. And we also do have a healing resource for you tonight, copies of the DVD, Sarah's Choice, starring Rebecca St. James. For a question or comment with our guest, join the discussion. We're talking tonight with Jill Stanek at 1-800-811-3003 here on Cradle My Heart Radio.
Sarah's dreams were in her grasp.
I can assure you, sir, if you give me this opportunity, you won't be disappointed.
This company is indeed lucky to have bright young people like you.
A promising career.
Just think, honey, in a couple of months, you'll have a glass office like me.
A great boyfriend.
It's going to be goodbye to the boiler room. Hello, big time.
Everything seemed just perfect until...
What's the accuracy of these things anyway?
Seeking to help others find God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Call toll free at 800-811-3003.
This is Kim Cattola. Glad that you are joining us tonight here on Cradle My Heart Radio. Our guest is Jill Stanek. You know, when I was sharing the guest lineup for one of our programs a few weeks ago, Cecil Stokes, producer of October Baby, I would tell friends and fans about the friends and family about the plot line of the movie, and about how Cecil did such a great job of telling the story of a young woman who survived an attempted abortion, later went in search of her birth mother. And such stories do exist. And people, if they weren't aware that the stories like this do exist, they would say, no way, a late-term abortion, wow. And so someone survived and lived into adulthood. And yes, such stories do exist. Often, late-term abortions, though, result in the death of a child. And Jill Stanek witnessed that as a nurse. If you're just joining us, she's been telling us the story of what happened and how she became active on the cause of defending life before birth as a result of what she witnessed there. Jill, tell me, did you have a grief reaction? Because for those of us who have lost children due to abortion or have lost children, you know, infant loss because of reproductive child loss, I mean, tell me about your grief and how you handled that part of this emotional experience for you.
Well, first of all, can I just mention that, Kim, you brought up a good point about moms who have had late-term abortions, and I want to mention that, shockingly, there are moms who are listening to your show tonight who aborted their late-term baby and didn't know it until now. And I say that because it is so often coded when a mom is carrying a wanted baby, has that second trimester ultrasound, is told that there's something wrong with the baby, or she has an amniocentesis, said that the baby has Downs or spina bifida or whatever, and then there's a great deal of pressure by the medical community to abort, by social workers, by insurance companies behind the scenes who would rather pay for $5,000, $10,000 for an abortion than for long-term care or surgeries. And so they're counseled, and I have spoken with mothers who didn't know that they had abortions because they were told that they were having what they called an early induction of labor, mid-trimester labor induction, you know, like even they don't know what has been happening to them. I even worked with a nurse who was in the middle, a new nurse who was in the middle of an abortion with her patient, and she came to me with a question and said, Jill, I have a patient who's having a, I don't know what it is called, but, you know, can you give me a hand? And I looked at the chart, and I'm like, your patient is having an abortion. You know, she didn't even understand it. So there are moms and dads out there tonight who may be in shock right now, you know, thinking back and realizing what they've done. And so they, too, you know, need prayer and to, you know, probably again throughout the program be given information on who to contact, you know, and get counseling and healing.
There's the National Helpline for Abortion. If you go to my website, which is cradlemyheart.org, on the right sidebar, there are a number of organizations. The National Helpline has a 24/7 hotline, Abortion Recovery International. There's Option Line at 1-800-712-HELP. And we can also connect you to resources off the air if you'll give us a call. And our number is 1-800-811-3003. Jill, we have a caller who has been working in post-abortion ministry, and so I want to go to Linda. And Linda, maybe you can talk with us about whether you have seen women who have been suffering emotionally and spiritually after late-term abortion, if they present special problems or just even, even just a thought or two about what would be most helpful. Okay, Linda, welcome. You're on Cradle My Heart Radio.
Yes, thank you.
Have you seen women impacted by second trimester or late-term abortions? Is there a special spiritual challenge? How do you approach post-abortion ministry?
Women that have come in after having had an abortion are suffer from a variety of symptoms, depression, possibly suicidal, go from one relationship to another, just never can find peace. And it usually has been because they have had an abortion and they haven't been able to tell anyone about it. They haven't been able to mourn it. And they realize they have lost a human being, a child, that they took the life of their own child.
And how do you help? I mean, I know it's a complex problem, and it takes time, and you have to come alongside them. But maybe just to give someone hope as to a little bit of what that process looks like, or where their hope might begin tonight, Linda.
We have I'm a facilitator of a recovery group, and we walk women through stages. It's like a 12-step process. But the first stage is realizing that they are a human being and that they have been hurt, looking at the people who have hurt them, walking through their own anger, their deep-seated anger, through the whole process that they've had to keep hidden, and then eventually bringing them around to realizing that God does love them and has forgiven them, and then that they are able to forgive themselves finally.
Wonderful. Linda, tell us the name of your organization, how people can get in touch with you. You're in the Minneapolis area?
Yes. It's called Conquerors through New Life Family Services, and we have several locations in St. Paul, in Richfield, and the number is 612-746-5663. For totally confidential information and be able to talk to somebody about your abortion experience.
Thank you, Linda. I appreciate it. And nice to talk with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Kim.
So, Jill, as we think about what is at stake here, the Infant Born Alive Act you mentioned, but you've also had some influence in the partial birth abortion ban. And tell me about that, about your involvement, and because I think you were you present for the signing of the legislation in both of those cases at the national level?
Yes, I was invited to President Bush signed the Born Alive Act into law on August 5th, 2002. I was invited to that signing, and then the following year, Senator Santorum read my testimony during debate on the partial birth abortion ban, and it when it passed, and I was invited to that signing as well. And I want to, if you don't mind, go back to
please
topic of late term abortions. You know, you mentioned that they're rare, and they are definitely rarer than first trimester abortions. But there's a whole category of mom out there who, as I described before, are carrying wanted babies and then finding out during their second trimester ultrasound that there's something wrong, being pressured heavily to abort. And so many, and I mentioned that some of these moms don't know, but there are many moms who, you know exactly what I'm talking about and know what they've done. And so they're, because of all the diagnostic, you know, medical advances that we have nowadays, there is a lot more problems being found out, you know, in the middle of a pregnancy. So a lot more opportunities to abort, reasons to abort than there might have been 10, 20 years ago. And this mom lives with a special kind of grief. I've talked to these moms where, you know, the medical community and the counseling community thinks that they're doing them a favor, that they're carrying either a sick baby or a baby who's going to die when the baby's born. And so they think if they cut short their grief by 10 or 15 weeks so they don't have to carry a baby who they know is going to die or who they think is going to suffer, they think that they're helping her, and they're not. This mom now has to live the rest of her life knowing that rather than, you know, follow through with her maternal instincts that were all given, she, you know, killed her handicapped baby rather than, you know, helped her handicapped baby. And they have unique problems that we need to be aware of, and that their suffering is, you know, I can't speak that their suffering is all that different. It is different in a way than the other kinds of abortion suffering, and it's something that people need to watch out for. Counselors need to watch out for, and these moms, I think, probably need a little more help. You know, advanced help. Because
I agree, and I appreciate you saying that. In my experience, in the women that I've talked with, and mostly I have encountered women in conference settings, but also interviewing them and telling their stories in broadcast setting. We shouldn't even use the word rare, because it doesn't,
yeah.
You know, if it happened to you, it's, you know, 100% your experience, right? I mean,
yeah.
It doesn't, it's not a numbers game here. But what I hear is that the reality of motherhood was that much more acute. Because
they felt the baby move, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And plus, right. You know, with a first trimester procedure, many, many women, as I did, can tell themselves or believe what they were told, that it's not a baby.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to later term abortion, you know, it's just so evident what is actually taking place that it is more traumatic. And I think it's important for us to really handle with care. And as Jill said, if you're listening and this applies to you, I really do hope and pray that you will reach out for the help that you need. And everyone who's operating in this arena to offer help understands the need for confidentiality and privacy and understands the delicate nature of you reaching out for that help. But I hope that today will be the day that you do that today. Now, so Jill, I understand where you're going to with your comment, because the answer and the argument, and I like to call it counterfeit compassion, from those who are in favor of abortion rights, will say that you're forcing women to experience something against their will, or you're forcing a child to be born with no predicted quality of life, that you're, you know, that you're I'm not saying you, I've had this accusation be made to me, because, you know, I believe that we should let God have his way when a child is present in the mother's womb. But, you know, that is seen as being cruel. That is seen as being, you know, if we have some sort of medical intervention, we always should employ it. Speak to that mindset, if you can.
I have never met a mom who carried a baby, for instance, who was doomed to die when that baby was born, you know, minutes, hours, days, going to die. Anencephaly, you know, no brain, one of the trisomies. I've never met a mother who decided to carry her baby to term and deliver her baby and hold her baby, have her family around her, meet the baby, take pictures with the baby, spend time with the baby. I've never met a mother who regretted that. But I, Kim, have met many moms who just live with such regret and guilt for having killed their handicapped baby. And they don't fit in a category. You know, there's websites online, Facebook groups, discussion groups for moms, for instance, of whose babies have died of anencephaly. They don't have brains that are developed, and so they die very quickly. These moms aren't even welcomed in that community because they, you know, didn't just deliver their babies naturally. So they have their own discussion groups. They feel even ostracized from people who had moms who had babies like theirs. They can't even talk to them because, you know, they went through abortion. So it gets very complicated. But if a mom is out there now and she's been given a poor diagnosis, I hope that she's hearing this and that she will do the right thing for her child.
Amen. And if a mom is out there who participated in abortion at a doctor's direction, because I know there are those moms listening too, I pray, and what I really teach women to do is to, you know, ask God to show you your accountability. If you followed medical advice in good faith, ask God to show you your accountability in that decision-making process, and for you to seek forgiveness only for the part that you are responsible for. If physicians led you down different paths, and you mentioned or hinted at some of the reasons why physicians might do that, they might have liability concerns, they might have, you know, there are lots of reasons why a physician might recommend this beyond their concern for the life of the child. We're only accountable for our own accountability, and I think that's really, really important for us to understand. We'll take a short break. It's 48 minutes after the hour. Our phone lines are open. We welcome your calls. Please do join us. Our guest is Jill Stanek, 1-800-811-3003, 1-800-811-3003, here at Cradle My Heart Radio. This is Cradle My Heart Radio. Thank you for listening tonight. My name is Kim Catola. Our guest is Jill Stanek, one of the top pro-life bloggers in the U.S. and a very influential person on the cause for life, because she has taken her faith with her into the public square after her eyes were opened to what abortion really does. Her blog is at jillstanek, STANEK.com. And Jill, you do a fabulous job of keeping us up to date about what is really happening in the world of legislation, what is really happening for influential thought leaders on this question. And you mentioned how important it is for us to understand the mindset and to understand the political action that's going on around this issue from those who are not upholding the cause of life. I want to have you talk just a little bit about what you learned about the Christian denominations that are upholding abortion as their official policies, because I think this is very surprising to a lot of people.
Well, one of the cornerstones I've heard of their debate is, I think it's in Deuteronomy, where, you know, God implores us to choose life, you know, and I think through Joshua. And they say, see, since God says choose life, he's giving us the choice. So there's that mindset that says God is, you know, we have free will, and God is saying, you know, better to choose life, but you can choose not to, you know, bring life forth. Then there's those people who think that babies aren't human until they take a breath, because Adam didn't, you know, wasn't alive until he took a breath. So there's, believe me, if you don't want to believe something, you know, there you can find ways not to believe something. So that you also find that they mixed different religions than Christianity, goddess worship, you know, in with their faith. You also find that their denominations are shrinking. And the only way that these liberal denominations manage to stay alive is that they keep combining forces and meshing with one another and keeping their numbers up that way. But there's a shrinking group, and, you know, when it's the Bible-believing churches that are growing, and not them for sure.
So how are you predicting things are going to go, Jill? I don't think there's anybody that's more informed on this situation in terms of different legislative initiatives that are going on at the state level. And, of course, we're facing the election coming up this fall. What do we need to know from your point of view? What does the average person listening tonight need to know?
Well, they need to vote pro-life. You know, we are called to be one issue people. You know, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. You can't have liberty and the pursuit of happiness if you don't have life. It's the cornerstone of our country. And I think I was just reading in Isaiah this morning. Isaiah 1 talks, God is lamenting his people, and he's saying, your whole head is infected. And I think that's how pro-abortion politicians, people who judges who think that abortion is okay, their whole head is infected. And we can't possibly think that they're going to be, that they will have as great a concern for us and our older people and our infirmed if they think it's okay to kill a preborn baby, as a pro-life politician would think. So it's very important that people vote pro-life. On the topic in general, I think that we're winning. You know, just by attrition alone, they keep killing their children and we don't. And so over the course of time, we will win just because there ends up to be more of us than there are of them. But we don't want to win that way. But there are polls. The Gallup poll in particular has been asking the same question every year since 95. Do you consider yourself pro-life or pro-choice? And for the first time in 2009, more Americans considered themselves pro-life than pro-choice. And this year, the lowest number ever of Americans, 41%, consider themselves pro-choice. So we are slowly but surely winning. But there's a lot more going on than just abortion. You know, we've got thousands. I just received a note the other day from a bioethicist that said there's 160,000 embryos in frozen animation, you know, IVF babies that are just, you know, frozen somewhere and nobody's doing anything about them. Then we've got the other end of life now, assisted suicide and euthanasia. That's becoming a big issue now. And now it's, you know, the abortion culture is advancing across the world. We may be starting to stamp it out here, but it's just getting a foothold around the world. So, you know, we lament 55 million babies killed here since 1973, but the Guttmacher Institute, which is Planned Parenthood's research arm, says that almost 1 billion babies have been killed worldwide in the past two decades, Kim, and that's one-seventh of our population. And so we've got just the vast number of people who have been killed. You know, there has never been a war or a Holocaust or a plague that can match how many human beings have been killed by abortion. But also, the demographics of the world is changing now in ways we've never seen before. You know, the world population is supposed to be shaped like a triangle with the most people at the bottom. And that's changing now, where sometimes we'll see a rectangle with the same number at all age groups. Sometimes we'll see an inverted triangle where there's fewer younger people supporting more older people. The world has never seen this before. And also in Asian countries, we're killing girls, you know, by abortion because of ultrasound. And so there are some countries, China, Indonesia, India, that have vastly skewed ratio of male to female. We've never seen that before in this world either. So So there are some consequences to abortion that are catastrophic that are already underway.
Mm-hmm.
And we, you know, can try and dissuade now, but there are still some wheels in motion that we're not going to be able to surmount.
Well, Jill, I appreciate your reporting on this, and I've been following closely your review of Planned Bullyhood, and we really don't have time to get into it, but you're giving this book strong credibility from Karen Handel about what really mm-hmm. happened between Komen and Planned Parenthood.
Right. Planned Parenthood is another dastardly organization to be dealt with, and if, you know, I do recommend Karen Handel's book. She was a leader in Komen and kind of the scapegoat when Komen decided to defund Planned Parenthood.
Mm-hmm.
It was just earlier this year, believe it or not, and then changed its mind when it got so much flack.
Sure.
And,
well, we're out of town, but out of time,
yeah.
That is, but that is the cliffhanger. So
yeah.
Please do go to jillstanek.com and read Jill's reporting. And also, let your heart become active as well. Jill Stanek, thank you so much for being our guest tonight. I appreciate you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
JillStanek.com is the web address to learn more about Jill's work and ministry. And you can find the podcast of this interview as well as our other programs at our website, which is cradlemyheart.org. I'm Kim Cotola. Thank you for joining us tonight. We'll be back next week. Our guest will be Georgette Forney of the Silent No More Awareness Campaign. God bless you. Thanks for listening. Have a great night.